Welcome to the Board of Ministers, the executive led by the Minister for Finance, Mr. Rodham, and his colleagues, the Lady, Ms. Matega, Mr. Matsalady, Deputy Minister Nene. Also, to speak to the DG present here, the DG for Treasury, and the other DGs, very familiar with it. Just introduce himself. Ms. Bala is here, Council General, personnel from the Ministry of Finance, FSC, I see Mr. Kumalo, welcome, your team. I took us through a workshop on Tuesday. Thank you for that as well. From the Chair, I wish you well for 2012. It's going to be a very busy year. The compliments for the year. We are full of energy, and let's tackle the bull by the horns and do our work the best we can. Also, welcome to the Minister of Higher Education, Mr. Kamandi. Welcome. Honourable members, I was asked a question. Why weren't we not consulted in the first case? When this intervention was done, and I refer the honourable members to page 57 of the Constitution, section 101B. I'm going to read it for record purposes. When a promise cannot or does not fulfill an executive obligation in terms of legislation or the Constitution, the national executive may intervene by taking any appropriate steps to ensure fulfillment of that obligation, including, in this case, subsection B, assuming responsibility for the relevant obligation in that province to the extent necessary when it goes on. So, in terms of that, section 101B of the Constitution, the intervention was done by the executive, and then referred to by the contacting commentary section in terms of the rules to the Select Committee for Finance. Got with me the letter that was sent by the Honourable Minister of Finance to Chairperson N.K. Masandu, Chairperson of the NCP, dated the 7th of December, and then a letter from the Deputy Chairperson of the NCP, Honourable Mandela, by the 30th of December, referring the matter to the Select Committee for Finance. So that is for record purposes why we are having this meeting. Honourable members, since this administration came into office in 2009, and if you read the State of the Nation address since 2009 and the budget speeches by the Minister of Finance and other members in cabinet, other ministers, the main theme is good governance to get value for money, because we are working with the state's money, proper financial management, the delivering of services, but also the costing of services. The whole issue of management, monitoring, control, devaluation, and then taking corrective steps is something went wrong. The PFMA, all the members must have this book in the suitcase every day. The accountability by the accounting officer, financial misconduct in terms of the PFMA. The role of Parliament, the role of members of Parliament, the role of councillors in terms of oversight and in terms of accountability. And the will to do certain things. With this background, honourable members, welcome. Honourable Sabandi, Chairperson of the Select Committee for Public Service, I don't see all the Magati here at Rashmeni. I think they are still on their way. It's quite a process to get into this building today with all the searching going on outside. So they're on their way. On Bochani, the chairperson of Select Committee for Appropriations, is also on his way from the airport, so they will join us. Alba Minister Gotham, you are welcome again to this meeting to take us through the briefing with your colleagues.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to all of our colleagues and others that are in the room. And to those that we haven't seen before, Happy New Year, although the year is getting a bit old. But some of us still look bright and breezy, so that's good. Chairperson, thank you very much for, on behalf of my colleagues, the ministers that are here, for this opportunity to brief the NCOP committee and to explain why Cabinet took the decision it did on the 5th of December. As you correctly pointed out, Chairperson, I'm also going to refer to the Constitution. Section 101 says, and if you don't mind, I'm going to repeat what you said, when a province cannot or does not fulfill an executive obligation, financial management is one example of an executive obligation. In terms of the Constitution or legislation, the National Executive may intervene by taking any appropriate steps to ensure fulfillment of that obligation, including, and 101B says, assuming responsibility for the relevant obligation in that province to the extent necessary, and it continues. Section 102, subsection 2, says that if the National Executive intervenes in a province in terms of subsection 1B, it must submit a written notice of intervention to the NCOP within 14 days, the letter that you referred to, Chairperson, which we have complied with. B, the intervention must end if the Council disapproves the intervention within 180 days, and that continues. And 2C, the Council must, while the intervention continues, review the intervention regularly and make any appropriate recommendations to the National Executive. So I imagine, Chairperson, that your select committees in the NCOP and us as ministers will have a few interactions while this intervention continues. I'm going to make reference to a joint press statement that colleagues around the table from Cabinet made at a press conference in Limpopo on the 19th of January 2012, which very simply states the facts as they obtained at that point in time, and much of which still obtains today, though not all of it. This press statement indicates, Chairperson, that on the 22nd of November 2011, it became clear that the province would not be able to pay teachers, doctors, nurses, social workers, service providers, and other public sector employees. Throughout last year, that's 2011, National Treasury had cautioned the Limpopo Provincial Treasury that the province would not have sufficient cash to finance its 2011-12 budget obligations. The province has been spending beyond its means, and this has to stop. Currently, the province faces a potential shortfall of 2 billion rands, and we'll give you in a minute an update on that amount. The National Treasury will have to restructure the province's finances in order to find savings of 2 billion rands to cover the shortfall. The statement continues to indicate that the Provincial Treasury had an overdraft at the South African Reserve Bank of 757 million in November 2011, and the province wanted to increase the overdraft facility by one billion, making it 1.7 billion. Once National Treasury received the request from the province to increase its overdraft, officials undertook a careful due diligence and came to the conclusion that without a Section 101B intervention, the province would not be put on a sound financial footing. The Director General of the National Treasury wrote a letter to the province, and I quote, that letter says, unless there is urgent action taken by the province to address these issues, the Limpopo Provincial Treasury is likely to preside over a serious failure of public systems and process for service delivery, end of quote. This province had also requested an additional 500 million rand overdraft facility from a commercial bank, which doesn't allow us to name it. The bank refused this request and terminated this facility. Now, why did this situation come about? I'm going to take you very quickly through a presentation, Mr. Chairperson, that takes you through not only Limpopo, but also the two other provinces, Free State, which is under 101A, and although that's not strictly an obligation we have, I thought it'd still be useful for the committee to be aware of some of the developments there, and Gauteng, where the intervention is in terms of the TFMA. You have the presentation in front of you, so slide 2 is just a quick overview. Slide 3 indicates the key interventions that are necessary in Gauteng, which I'm going to repeat in a moment, in respect of the health department, the treasury, the Gauteng Shared Services Center, the procurement model of the Kopanong government precinct, and a number of growth funds that were not established in terms of the TFMA. Slide 4 makes reference to the health department in the Gauteng province. Accruals of 2.1 billion rand were unpaid at the end of the financial year, that's last year, and special efforts have to be made in order for these accruals to be paid off. The Minister of Health and myself, with a number of officials, have met with the Premier and several MECs earlier this week in order to assist Gauteng to find this money and start paying off these accruals so that hopefully by the end of this financial year we reach very close to zero. There's 1.6 billion rands of accumulated outstanding debts that are owed to the department, and we're also assisting to see if some entities that owe this money, amongst them is the Road Accident Fund, would speed up their payments so that the province will have cash that it is entitled to. Challenges in paying service providers, I've referred to that earlier on, and here again, emergency measures have been put in place to ensure that by this Friday, a payment plan is developed with most of the major suppliers in order that supplies to the provincial health department continue, on the one hand, and there's a plan to pay off the debt on the other hand. Accumulated unauthorized expenditure of 4.74 billion, that needs to be sorted out with the legislature. The challenges in respect of senior personnel in the health department and the possibility of an overspend of 1 billion rand by the department as well. Slide 5 makes reference to the Gauteng Shared Services Center and its inefficiencies, particularly in respect of the supply chain leakages and payment confusion, and I refer to the Kopanong administration project. Slide 6. Since the intervention was decided on the 5th of December 2011 by Cabinet, the Ministers of Finance and Health on the one hand and the Premier of the province have signed an MOU and agreed upon the actions that need to be taken in order to place the Gauteng Health Department on the right footing. The process underway is to accelerate payment, as I indicated earlier. The Provincial Treasury is to make cash available to fast-track payment. Steps must be taken to control personnel expenditure, both at the provincial level and in respect of the institutions that fall under the provincial department. The 2012 health budget must be fully funded. There must be two types of reprioritization. One is within the health department itself, and the second, reprioritization within the province's finances as a whole, very similar to what KZN has been able to achieve over the past 2 years and place its finances and challenges in respect of the health department on an excellent footing. Slide 7. The progress we can report is that the MOU is now being implemented. There's a report on the disestablishment of the Gauteng Shared Services Center submitted to the National Treasury, which is being reviewed at the moment. There's also work being conducted on the Kopanong government precinct in addition to the financial matters I've indicated. If you turn to slide 9, it takes us to the Free State. Here, as you know, Cabinet on the 5th of December agreed that the intervention will be, or decided that the intervention will be in terms of Section 101A of the Constitution, with specific reference to strengthening the provincial treasury, filling critical positions, ensuring departments comply with the PFMA, ensure compliance with the borrowing powers of Provincial Governments Act and to meet Section 8, requirements of Section 18 of the PFMA, and particularly in respect of the Department of Police, Roads and Transport, to attend to failures in the supply chain processes and performance audits to be undertaken in the department, or the matters arising from it. In respect of the department itself, on slide 10, the department did not follow proper supply chain processes in its road program. 23 roads were awarded for construction purposes without proper tender processes. There's also contravention of the Borrowing Powers Act that I referred to earlier in the PFMA. The provincial system has been exposed to the extent of 4.2 billion rand, and the road costs seem to be double the contract value that has been signed off. Weaknesses in the department's asset management processes have also got to be attended to. I'll just ignore the rest. I'm sure all of you can read it. Slide 11. In respect of the provincial treasury, the inability of provincial treasury to implement strong financial management and fiscal discipline in the department needs to be, amongst the departments, needs to be addressed. There's a disregard for legislative and fiscal procedures, a careful evaluation of the impact of ExCo decisions, and delays in the infrastructure delivery resulting in slower expenditure. There is a possible risk to the financial management system and poor performance and application of procurement processes. Progress to date, essentially in January, the Section 101A directives have been formulated, have been signed off, and have been communicated to the province. The Premier has undertaken the responsibility to lead the implementation of those directives. The Treasury has deployed technical support staff to the department referred there, and an assessment is being undertaken at the moment in respect of the capacity needs of the provincial treasury. And furthermore, an assessment of all the financial arrangements within the provincial treasury as well. Chairperson, we now move to slide 14, which takes us to Limpopo. Here, Cabinet decided that the intervention will be in respect of, in terms of Section 101B of the Constitution, and that the department that would be affected by that intervention would be the Provincial Treasury, Education, Health, Roads and Transport, and Public Works. It does not have, as I indicated earlier, a cash to meet its obligations. I've spoken about the extension to the overdraft and what that would have amounted to, the private bank and what facilities were required at the bank, the inability potentially to pay teachers, doctors, etc., and the serious risks this posed both to staff of the province and the credibility both of the province and the country as a whole. Slide 15, the province also has a large accumulated unauthorized expenditure. It grew from 1.5 billion in 2009 to 2.7 billion in 2011. Accruals of 500 million rand at the end of March 2011. These accruals are essentially unpaid invoices where you take an invoice, place it in a drawer, say December, January, and then wait until the 1st of April and hope that you've got money the following year to pay off last year's debt. The practice of not paying invoices or service providers on time has been there for some time. Slide 16, we say that from our evaluation, the provincial treasury has had essentially collapsed. Lots of senior staff have left or been forced to leave. There's been no cash management system in place. Payments were made too frequently, up to 8 times a month, which doesn't give any time to check documentation, contracts, or the receipt of proper goods, or the proper receipt of goods. Payments releases, irrespective of whether there is cash available, people are often confused between a budget allocation and cash availability. So one can have a budget allocation of a billion rand, but if you only have 600 million rand cash, you can't go and spend a billion rand. You only spend 600 million rand until you find the rest. No departmental controls in place to avoid withdrawing from the bank account, ineffective expenditure management, the usual supply management processes, not in line. EXCO endorsed illegal procurement processes. There's evidence of illegal payments that's beginning to emerge. And the budget section of the Treasury, which is an absolutely crucial part, was dysfunctional. On the education side, there was no credible budget prepared. Personnel costs were not fully funded. 2,400 excess teachers, 200 ghost teachers. The department had not did not have supply chain management capability, did not order the learner support material on time. My colleague Minister Motseka will elaborate on that. Did not pay invoices on time, accruals of 190 million rand. The department could not manage infrastructure delivery. Health, poor asset management, irregular expenditure to the tune of 400 million rand, 427 million rand in assets with no supporting documents, 138 million rand of accruals, and projects overspending on their budgets. Public works, no asset management system in place, supply chain violations, again, Minister will elaborate on that, and modifications of existing contracts to increase tender value. Department of Transport, no contract management system, weak internal controls, no oversight of the Limpopo Roads Agency. What's the progress over the last month or so? Teams from each of the national departments have been appointed in their respective provincial departments to take over to one extent or another. The provincial finances have been partially stabilized. There is now some cash management practice in place. Structures and controls still need to be put in place. We've ensured that the Port of Province has enough cash to meet its expenditure requirements and that it only spends on cash that is available. We've ensured that creditors with legitimate claims are paid. Payments will only be made where there is proof that there's a proper invoice, a proper contract, and a proper tender or legal instrument. All illegal supply chain guidelines and processes will be revoked. We've prepared a credible budget. The National Treasury has prepared the budget for the province, which the Premier and his colleagues have begun to agree with, and that will be the budget for the coming year of 2012-13. We've stabilized the finances in the medium to longer term as well, and the key task now is to build the capacity of the department and to hire the right and competent staff. The process of preparing the budget, as I said, is on the way. Stabilizing the provincial bank account is on the way. The cash shortfall, which we thought would amount to 2 billion rands at the end of the financial year, has already been trimmed down to 1.1 billion rands. Creditors with legitimate claims are being paid within the prescripts of the legal requirements, and various control measures are being put in place. The one slide that should have been there, Chairperson, that is not there at the moment, is from higher education. Before Minister Nzimande fires his first shot at me, let me just include some of his challenges in the province. The first is that I think out of the 8 colleges, FED colleges in the province, he has the challenge of improving management. 3 of them have had acting managers for some time. He intends to place or consider placing 2 colleges under administration, and verification of college grants and reconciliation of transfers from higher education to the Limpopo Department of Education. Now, basically what that is that if 100 million rand was transferred from the higher education department for a particular college, did that 100 million rands actually reach that college? Or did only 80 million rands reach it? And there's numbers that are available which the minister might address, but there's some verification that needs to occur. There's incorrect upgrading of personnel in the Waterberg district. There's fast-tracking of the filling of posts in the vacant college management posts that I indicated earlier. But perhaps when we get to the later part of this meeting, Minister Nzimande could elaborate, because there's a number of other examples mismanagement in this particular area. So, Chairperson, let me conclude by saying that these are the facts which led to these interventions. In the last 6 weeks or so, good progress has been made. The financial side is beginning to take shape, and various ministers have begun to assert their influence in terms of attending to the priorities they've identified in each of the departments. And perhaps as you've got in your program, you will now invite each of them to give you further indications of both their challenges and the progress that they're making. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, for them. Honourable members, documentation was distributed to you prior to this meeting by Simil, our committee researcher. The press statement that you also received this morning, as well as analysis of the affected local departments that we are dealing with today. And what you will be getting, it hasn't arrived yet. We requested the Auditor General of Limpopo to supply us with a copy of his report, the 2010-2011 AG's report on all the departments in Limpopo. Now, with this briefing of today and these documents you will receive, this will be the background for us going forward when we interact with the departments mentioned in that province. But when you look, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, to page 5 of this document from the AG, there exists an oversight backlog in the provincial legislature of Limpopo referring to the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, going back for 2 years. Also referring to the portfolio committees on education, on health, treasury, etc. That when you've listened to the honorable ministers, we will have to do things differently in terms of our oversight. We can't carry on like the past 20 years together. And that's history. To fulfill our mandate that we received in 2009 in April. Also looking at the AG's report, page 23 of irregular expenditure that runs into billions. 96% of the budget of the bulk irregular expenditure is in irregular expenditures, education and health. 98% of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, page 24, is in education and health. So that is the documentation. Honorable Machega, Minister, you're welcome to take us through your presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I also recognize and acknowledge the different members of the committee that are here. Chair, I don't think there's much really that we want to add from basic education. But what stands here, what we also uncovered as part of the intervention nationally in Limpopo, what I can report is that indeed we are making progress. We have serious delays in terms of the delivery of LTSM. We've had to glean data and make sure that the data that was given to us for the procurement of those books was credible. And we are satisfied at this stage that indeed what we are going to procure is what the schools need to have procured. It took us a long time because we had to go, I think, order by order and verify with the schools. So we couldn't do it before the schools reopened so that we can verify the information. So we are quite satisfied about that. We're looking at other urgent activities like the scholar transport, also cleaning that data to make sure that, again, we can ensure that we have the right learners and also the service providers are the ones that have the proper contracts. The same thing with school nutrition, we are also screening the data to make sure again that the contracts that we have to pay are in order. So because, as I say, our sector is a moving target. I mean, yesterday whilst I was watching news, so kids were not being transported for the past 5 months. So which means the problems had begun even before we came into the province. So we are attending to those other emergency and firefighting activities to see how we can retrieve and save children, retrieve whatever we can and save kids where they are most affected. So currently, what we are ready to do is to stabilize the most urgent ones, make sure that schooling is happening, whilst on the other hand, are working with the province with their, and can testify to their cooperation to sort out the underlying factors that led to the situation which we find ourselves in, which is really mainly around your HR management. The poor management of your post-establishment, that's what has mainly sunk the province. And we had raised warning bells beforehand, but we are quite confident that now that we have the power to intervene, because in the past we could only warn the province to say, from our monitoring, we can see these trends and send warnings. And in terms of the constitution, there was not much we could do except for raising awareness to the province to say, from our monitoring processes, we are aware that they are going to get into trouble. But now that we are working with the province, we are confident that we will be able to work with them to sort out that which we had long noticed, even long before the intervention came. Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. We welcome also to the meeting Honourable Ndebele, Minister for Transport, and Minister Pagliacci. I recognize the Honourable Segoni from the Standing Committee on Appropriations in the National Assembly, and also joined us is the Honourable Rasmeni, the chairperson of the Select Committee for Health and Social Services. And then the legal person is here, Advocate Jenkins. I see him there at the back. Welcome also to you. Minister Motsoaledi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the Minister of Finance has said most of the things. I just want to add a few sentences, maybe clarify a few things which I'm sure people read about or saw on TV or heard about. The issue of the stoppage of health services, especially pharmaceuticals and food supplies to hospitals after the intervention, because there was a general belief that the intervention stopped such services. I want to reassure the House that apart from the issues that the Minister of Finance has mentioned, the National Department of Health got in Limpopo as early as the 8th of December 2011. And by the 14th, we already had evidence that the amount of money which was supposed to be paid to service providers in December was 138 million. But the method we followed was to verify whether this money needs to be paid in terms of valid requests from the end users, valid contracts, valid order numbers, delivery notes for receipt of goods, where applicable, valid invoices, and accurate payment advices. And after going through that process on the 23rd of December, out of the 108 million, the only amount which we found to be verifiable was 67 million, and that amount was paid in December. So it's not true that services were not being paid. We only paid that which we thought should be paid for. That amount included 33 million and for pharmaceuticals. But the amount that needed for payment for pharmaceuticals was 60 million. But we could only verify 33 million, which we deemed as legal, and that's the amount we paid. In January, on the 10th of January, we followed the similar process, and an amount of 118 million rand was paid. That included 42 million rand for pharmaceuticals, but the initial submission for pharmaceuticals was 94 million. We couldn't verify the other 52 million, so we paid only the 49 million. And so the same thing happened with
the other services like catering services, where we paid 1.4 million in December and paid another 3 million in January. So by the middle of January, when there were food shortages in hospitals, it's not because we didn't pay anything, it's because some suppliers just stopped paying because they were informed that the government doesn't have money and it's not going to pay them. And that the Section 100 takeover has insisted that people shouldn't be paying for services. But at the moment, I'm happy to announce that we think the situation is under control. There are supplies in hospitals, as you can hear, it's cool now, and we go on with our work of verifying some of the problems that we encountered there. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Transport? Barely.
Thank you very much. You have heard from my colleague, the Minister of Finance, that quite a number of issues arise out of the Department of Roads and Transport. In this regard, therefore, we have now a presence as a department as part of the intervention team. We have got a team that is led from transport by a DDG, and with five others that are specializing in supply chain management, administration, budgeting, payments, income and expenditure, internal control and compliance. The team worked in cooperation with the officials of the province. An analysis of the challenge has also been done and communicated to the National Treasury via the administrator. And not only have commitments been made in this regard, but a team of forensic investigators have already been deployed, and there are expectations to receive further deployments in the verification exercise. Invoices are verified using a standard checklist for authenticity, correct attachments, paper trail, availability of contracts and reports for service rendered, and SCM compliance. On the other hand, the department is making efforts to look at ways of utilizing the external capacity brought earlier to meet the challenges in Limpopo. The actual areas where the department is being assisted, which are relevant to the work being performed in Limpopo, include the contract management, including contracts, verification, value for money, services rendered, quality assessment, most particularly in infrastructure projects. Contract verification routes in terms of public transport now, contract verification, route assessment, passenger count, quality of service assessment in the past subsidized contract, as well as strategic planning and management of transversal policies, gap analysis, internal controls, weaknesses, turnaround strategy, and organizational redesign. The following weaknesses were identified. 2010-2011 audit outcomes were qualified due to contract management system not in place. Commitment amounting to 84.5 million could not be verified. Internal control, the accounting officer did not adequately exercise oversight responsibility. This includes proper oversight over the Limpopo Roads Agency. In terms of immediate short-term emergency action crisis, management done and required. Although the department had projected to spend within the allocated budget for 2011-2012, there were signs of expenditure spikes in spite of months, especially the road infrastructure program transferred to road agency in Limpopo, and could not be made in November 2011 due to the shortage of cash. According to the department, this was due to the province-wide problem of cash shortage and had nothing to do with the department. However, urgent intervention was required, which involved introducing cost curtailment measures for the remainder of the financial year, amending the cash flow of January, February, March 2012, mindful of the cash available rather than the approved budget figures, reviewing delegation, particularly financial delegation, restructuring the procurement process, the tender committee, to bring about credibility and legitimacy. The review of 2012-2013 strategic plan, analyzing the transversal policies and internal control for purposes of improving them, to assist with the development of an implementation of action plan to address the weaknesses identified in the audit. Review of outsourced services to ensure effectiveness thereof of value for money and bringing stability into the department. Generally, these are the interventions that have been made, and we are there hands on a month-to-month basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. We also welcome Honorable Fagiachi, Public Works, Honorable Nancy, Minister.
Thanks, Chairperson, and honorable members. As highlighted by the Minister of Finance, the problems facing public works relate to the issues of list management, the asset management, information management systems, supply chain management, a lot of violation in relation to all these particular areas. And of course, our intervention was also like other departments to have officials from the national department to be placed in these areas and to dig deep in terms of these violations and try and help to put the system. We are at that particular level. And we're working, of course, together with the coordinating department, which is Treasury. And maybe one of the major problems relates to the issues of HR, where wrong people get appointed into positions where they cannot even deliver. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Pagliacci.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The department has established an interdisciplinary task team to give support of a transversal nature to the affected departments. Units consist of legal people and HR people, and people who are focused on service delivery improvements. We are mainly concerned with ensuring that in this period of our interim intervention in which we are stabilizing the financial function of the department, we must ensure that the sustainability of basic services to our people is in fact guaranteed, and for which we require the continued cooperation of the civil service in the affected departments. So the department is implementing a program to engage with civil servants to ensure a more rigorous integrity management framework is applied, and to convey the message very, very clearly that those civil servants who are guilty of wrongdoing will in fact face the consequences of their action.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Honourable Minister, Minister Nchimandi, Higher Education.
Yes, Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much. The officials have promised me that they are going to. It is on. It's my voice, maybe. No, there is a red, which should make it better for me. Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Just maybe to very quickly, the officials have promised me that they will circulate these slides. They are coming now, so I'm just going to very quickly talk to them. Chairperson, let me just also say just two quick preliminary points. We had agreed with Minister Maseka that insofar as FET colleges are concerned, our department should move in to deal directly with that because they are a co-responsibility at the moment in terms of the province and national. The second thing also just to remind members that for the overwhelming majority of our youngsters who have left school, having completed or not completed matric, the only hope they have for further education and training are these FET colleges. And it's even more so in a rural province like Limpopo. So we have sent a team which is on the ground now that is engaging with these issues that I'm going to highlight very quickly. And also, Chairperson, to inform the honorable members that we have also met with the seven college principals of the FET colleges in Limpopo. Maybe just before coming back to some of the things that we've done very quickly, we've picked up quite a number of problems, some of which are very serious, actually. One of those, the first of those is that there's been no implementation largely of pay progression for college lecturers in line with the dispensation that we've actually agreed upon. And also, the other key challenge is in relation to management. All colleges, by the way, have no deputy principals, the seven of them, and each one is supposed to have three deputy principals. And two colleges have acting principals, and one of the principals has been acting for 8 years. The post advertised three times, but never filled. But, Chairperson, also one of the things that we just need to highlight very quickly is that two of these FET colleges, Litaba and the Palale, we want to put them under administration because the situation has become so bad that they are actually completely dysfunctional. Now, a matter then quickly that had been raised by the Minister of Finance quickly is that insofar as the improvement of conditions of service, apart from pay progression, but generally, there is a shortfall of about 2.2 million. The province has made an allocation of 5.1 million instead of the 7.4 million that we actually need. But the other matter is that there is a variation that we are investigating now, that the Minister of Finance was talking about, between what we have allocated to the province. Remember, Chair, these are conditional grants. They are not supposed to be touched for anything else other than for FET colleges. Is that there is a variation between the allocation and what has been paid to each of the colleges. And in total, the variation is 56.5 million rand. Out of a total of 189, almost a third in terms of money that are supposed to be with colleges, but they are not with colleges. You will see the details once we discuss it. So in conclusion then, what we have to do, as we have said, is that there is a team that is working there, and I must say that the meeting with the FET colleges was really warmly welcomed. So we are going to be doing a verification and reconciliation. But most importantly, we also want to fast-track the filling of the vacant college management post. But then overall, we are of the view, we are working towards urgently setting up a team made up of people both from my department but also with outside assistance to really undertake a turnaround strategy for those FET colleges. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Are there any of the Director General then to add on? Treasury? Anyone else? No. I've noted the presence of the Honourable Magatje, chairperson of the Select Committee for Health and Social Services. There are extra copies of the research documents for the honorable members with my copies of it arrived. The personnel staff will see that you get it. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, there's the briefing from the task teams led by the honorable minister. What is coming out here is non-compliance with the PFMA. And I'm referring the honorable members to section 38, referring to the responsibilities of the accounting officers, HODs in the provincial department. Section 39 to 40 with regard to the accounting officer managing budget control. And then coming to section 81 to 86, referring to financial misconduct. If you listen to the briefings, if you read the press statement, something went wrong somewhere. Someone didn't do his or her work in terms of the legislation. Question. Those people deployed in those positions, are they qualified to do that work? That will be part of this committee's oversight they're going to play within the next few weeks in that province. But not only Limpopo, it goes to all provinces. I interacted with the Honorable Chani, chairperson of the Select Committee, that we call all nine provincial treasuries to Parliament to appear before us. That we'll have to be more serious to deal with quarterly reports of the different provincial departments, specific in the Select Committee for Finance and Appropriation, the spending on conditional grants. Is the money used what it has been allocated for? We just went through five provinces interacting with municipalities, using grants for operational costs, not complying with the Division of Revenue Act. What are we doing about it? Just sitting back and write the report? Where goes the report? No. We will have to do things differently. Coming back from the Northern Cape 10 days ago, we gave them 6 months in terms of Section 32 of the MFMA to put measures in place with regard to irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. And we are going back within 6 months after this report has been tabled in the NCP. Coming back to our role as select committees, coming back to our role as members of parliament deployed in a constituency to visit the hospital, to visit the clinic, to visit the school, three times a year. Middle of the year is the book's been ordered. Are there enough desks? Are there water? Is there electricity? Is the toilets working? The basic stuff. That's our responsibility. We can't point fingers and say, but that minister didn't do that. 10 fingers are pointing back to us. We are part of the system. So, with that, honorable members, questions, I just want to take your names. I'm going to start with the first row. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Bring me down the back. I see you, chairperson there, in that order. You gain some time. We gain some time, so we've got enough.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I've got a few questions to the national team.
Sorry, just when you put your question, just introduce yourself for the sake of the Honourable Minister.
Okay, I'm Makuvela. I'm My first question is, when this team went to Limpopo for intervention, was there any plan before in order to avoid such type of not supplying food and what? We're just hearing now that no, the plan is now in place by the minister here. It means it wasn't there. When you do something, you come up with the plan first so that you'll be able to do the intervention. I think the intervention was done haphazardly. The issue of 200 ghost teachers, when did you find this thing? Now during intervention or before? Minister Zimande is saying he's going to place two colleges under administration. Was there any plan in place now so that we mustn't disturb the education of children? Minister of Finance mentioned something which struck me just in her research. The stabilizing of the bank account. What is that? Can you come up clearly? I didn't hear properly. The issue of invoices, which was not paid. It was said it was going for a long time. Surprisingly, we are having National Treasury, Provincial Treasury. What will they do? Minister of Public Works talk about the lease problem, lease management. We just hear there is a lease management or a problem. Is there any strategy or a plan to rectify this thing? Not focusing only on the intervention of these places, Free State, Limpopo, but just a general intervention strategy. Thanks, Minister. I will just come back with you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I'm Khalif Mashamaite, a member of the Select Committee on Education. I've got only two questions to two Honorable Ministers here. Last question for clarification. The first question goes to Honorable Minister Mzaledi, Minister of Health. The Provincial Health Information System Minister is not working in Limpopo since it was approved in 2006 on November. And 265 million has been paid to the service provider. But the system is not working as we speak now, more than 5 years. Can you share with us, Minister, what are the problems for this system not working? Because the pocket of the service provider is full with 265 million. My second question goes to Honorable Mwesi, in terms of awarding of tenders in the Department of Public Works, awarding tenders without bidding processes, can you share with us, Minister, as to what is the number of tenders awarded already without bidding processes, and what is the value of those tenders? Can you share with us that, Honorable Minister? Thank you, Honorable Chief.
Honorable Shwandi. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. My name is Ted Sibandi, the Chairperson of the Select Committee on Public Services, which includes human settlement, transport, and public works. But nevertheless, I wanted to applaud one thing, of which sometimes you are making a mistake. You see, I was hit when you, before I ask questions, when you refer to the PSMA, the question which we must ask ourselves is that, is this intervention correct or not? The response is simply, yes, Minister, you are correct, more than 100%. In terms of the, beside the issue of intervention, the, when I refer to the Public Act, a Public Audit Act, with your constitutional function, Section 4, 1A up to F, as well as 3, I can't read them because it's a little bit long. 3A up to Roman figure 2, you are on the right track. Because besides intervention, you must do 1, 2, 3. All, you know, in short, all national and provincial departments and administration, they must account. Everybody must account, including the municipality. You are correct, more than 100%. Why I'm correcting that? Because the perception of some of the people, they will think and they will spread the perception as if this government is not functioning. It shows that the government is showing it's functioning. Including with the minister, the role you played is more than 100%. And correct also, if you refer to the PSMA, Chapter 5, of Section 38, if you go there in G, the role which you played in terms of accounting, I'll quote, read as it is, in G, on the cover of any unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, must immediately report in writing particulars in of the expenditure of the relevant treasury, and in the case of irregular expenditure involving the procurement of goods and services, also the relevant tender board. I mean, I'm trying to indicate the role which you have done, because some people, they will interpret wrong, like this, whatever. And then nevertheless, but I will go to the question, if you allow me, Chairperson. You see, what is worrying me, I wanted to fund, I'll find all the departments well. But whether do they, you see, because charity behind at home in terms of accounting, Department, if they can explain whether the department, do they have risk management? Because risk management are the ones who are supposed to alarm whatever person. You can have your scoper, you can have whatever, but risk management, we are the ones who are supposed to start to alert that there is something coming. And then again, the thing which I wanted to encourage is this situation of the synergy of the interdepartmental. As long as we don't have our systems speaking to each other, departments must, you know, I think we ought to shape up ourselves. I wanted to find out whether do we have an interdepartmental. Because an interdepartmental is where we can even check where some of the things which are overlapping to each other. And then the other one is that since we have discovered that there are these challenges of, and you know, with over expenditure, inflation of payments, whatever. My question then: how will the department plan to finance this project? I would put it in particular, like if you go to education and also in health, whereby it was discovered that they are causing exuberant money, while not. So why? What do you have in place to make sure that the thing doesn't continue to disallow the over-expenditure? I've got a lot of questions, Chairperson. I'll come again because this thing makes me too few. Thank you very much.
Yes, I just want to caution the honourable members that please be to the point with your questions. We must finish at 1 o'clock because of activities outside this committee room preparing for tonight's State of the Nation address. Honourable Mashile.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think what we need to do is to just appreciate the team for actually clarifying the committees here on the situation that they have unraveled in the province following the intervention. Of course, the situation that has been painted here, although it has committees who may not really appropriate it to Limpopo only, it may be a typical indication of more or less what is happening across all our provinces. Probably our interaction will actually reveal maybe specific issues in Limpopo as we move forward with this specific intervention. But to indicate that what has been painted by the presentations we received from the Minister of Finance and the other relevant ministers actually talks to the capacity of officials that we actually employ in our departments in specific leading positions of this department. It also talks to the ethical conduct of those specific officials and whether they are really operating with the requisite integrity that we expect them to do so. And it also really put questions on a stricter supply chain, internal control, also the functionality of oversight structures that we have put in place in terms of legislation, but it looks like practically on the ground these are really not functioning. Here we are actually talking to the audit committees, internal audit, which actually are drawing reasonable salaries, but their effort is, it looks like, is questionable. When you really look into this specific report and the public accounts committees in the legislature, whether it is functioning to the level that we require, these are the things that will really interrogate when we visit this specific province. And of course, also what will be interesting is resolutions that have been taken by the public account committees and the audit committees in the book. It will be interesting to find out, you know, what sort of resolutions and what sort of responses did these specific departments with the relevant MECs respond to this resolution. Because sometimes we may find ourselves saying that the public account committee is not functioning, whereas it's functioning, that their resolutions are just deliberately ignored. The internal auditors and the audit committees may be doing splendid work, but you find that their work actually just gathered dust on the shelves and nobody worries about them. But the picture is actually really talking to these particular matters that we will find them in our program of interacting with the program. But so I think what we want to make it clear is that this is an administrative intervention. Being an administrative intervention, we definitely need to plead with everybody, even ourselves, that we must actually ensure that we remove politics. We remove politics from this intervention, and we do with administration and get the administration sorted out and to ensure that the services are provided. Issues of politics, of course, there are specific times and specific areas where they actually play out, but this being the administrative intervention, they must deal with administration and make sure that we move forward. The only two issues, Chair, that we just want to request the team is the current process of completing the budget of the province. When will that be completed, and are the current officials part of the process? Because if they are going to implement the budget the following year, they must have correct consciousness of what is included in the budget and have clear knowledge and also the question of the shortfall. One understood that there are still continuing reconciliations to actually show exactly what is the shortfall, other than the 2.2 billion that we initially with. When will that be finalized and then being known so that the necessary strategy to actually deal with that specific shortfall, then it is completed? And also that have an indication whether the backlog of those creditors that were not paid, whether it is now zero, or what sort of level have we reached on the backlog of people to be paid. I think that's all, Chair, that is what it is. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile, for highlighting that. We want to get to good governance, and we want to get to sound financial management. That is the bottom line. Anyone else in the first row?
Thank you. I only want to make a short remark.
It's Honorable Becker speaking.
Yeah, my name is Jack Becker. I'm a member of this committee, and I'm a delegate from Western Cape. I'd like to congratulate the Minister of Finance with the way he put his presentation in front of us. Brutally and straightforward, honestly, he put the problems on the table. And he mentioned the big, big problem. You don't spend if you haven't got the money. Then Dr. Simani mentioned a word that I will pick up, responsibility. And to me, responsibility is the problem that we've got. No one takes responsibility of what is happening in administrative departments of the government. And I'm a bit worried that the other ministers in their presentations was splitting this responsibility and trying to put it on other ways. We have to find a way to take political responsibility, to take administrative responsibility for these problems. Thank you.
I believe that every cabinet member sitting here in this committee has that responsibility and want to get things done. That message must be clear. There must not be other perceptions. If you read the statement, the press statement of 19 January, the message is very clear in that press statement. Honorable Newby,
thank you.
Go to the second row. Honorable Bloom, I know you are. You are your.
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. The clarity that one wants to know is that this is a formal briefing to the different field committees which these departments are falling on. Now, I would want to know, there is this inter-ministerial committee, which is a subcommittee of the executive. And then we are here as different portfolios. I want to know our roles, because we are coming from an experience from Eastern Cape. There are many communities there, but there's no progress that is happening. So one wants to know that are we supposed, as we are being briefed, to play our role to say, Minister of Higher Education said ABCC, and then you go there, you find it's the committee's portfolio, NA and COP, then the Inter-Ministerial Committee. I want us to clarify our role so that we know. But there's nothing to us that you're duplicating. There's an overlapping. Over to stampede, yes. One day, so the end was stampeding them. they are no longer working. I know that it's our role to do oversight, but you also have your role also. You are a testing of the executive. So I want us to move out of here. Whether it will be the, in terms of way forward, we'll have a combination of one testing from our different committees, the NA and the National Council, Intercountry of Provinces, so that you don't have the portfolio coming from NA going to do the same thing. When the Senior Committee for Education would do the same thing. So, our role. Two, where lies the problem? Is it, where lies the problem? Because we need to solve that so that when the executive pulls out, we know whether the capacity has been built, whether the problem is in the middle management, or is it at the senior level, or it is at the executive. So where lies the problem? The last one. On the ghost post, we've just heard today that the 4,000 teachers at the Eastern Cape are back, will be back. There are those goalposts that you have identified. It's going to be a precedent again to say you have taken them and here was this goalpost that you want these teachers. So what do I need to say? We need to retain in terms of what is that we want to achieve at the end of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Ruby. On the Eastern Cape, yes, we are now dealing with Limpopo. This matter of the intervention was referred to the Select Committee for Finance on the 13th of December 2011. I've got the letter in front of me that came from the Honourable Mamela, Deputy Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, to consider and report on this intervention. Then the committee must, in terms of Rule 105 of the SOP rules, consult with other relevant select committees in considering this matter. That's why this is a joint meeting of the Select Committee for Finance, Education, Health and Public Services. We're going to do it jointly. The agenda for our work is already set in the press statement. If you go and analyze it, look at the presentations we received today. Look at the research documents that were distributed, as well as the Auditor General's report on the whole of Limpopo, sets our agenda for each Select Committee. But at the end of the day, the Select Committee for Finance must report to the House. And each other committee can also report to the House on their own findings. But the Select Committee, in terms of this letter, must fulfill this mandate that it received. And nothing stops us. In consultation with our colleagues in the National Assembly, chairing portfolio committees, to consult them if they want to go with us. Otherwise, there will be a duplication. We must work effectively and efficiently. I know the portfolio committee for education went to Limpopo. I know. They stopped building that. So that's the answer I can give you in terms of the letters we received from the leadership. Honorable Rashmeni, we're going in that fashion. We're coming to Honorable Blue.
Thank you. thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think Honorable Zinoba, what she was trying to do is just to compare the situation so that we understand it much better, what is happening and what should happen in future. Yeah, let me, Chairperson, probe further on the presentation by Minister Nzimande, that I welcome the decision by the department to put two FET colleges under administration, and also the turnaround strategy that he is planning to do. And what I want to know is how has the learning been affected in these two FETs? And also, how is learning going on in the other five colleges that are not put under administration? And lastly, I want to know that from the team of ministers that are led by the Minister of Finance, what plans have been put in place by the Treasury and all other departments affected in ensuring that this problem does not occur in future? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Please use a mic.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Let me first start by saying to the Minister of Finance, thank you very much for this intervention. And all the ministers present here. I don't think that anybody will really go against or not welcoming this intervention. Minister, you know, according to me, with my background, it seems as if we have employed a lot of crooks in this department. You see, it's a very painful thing to see that people are going in with credentials of, no, I'm a comrade and I'm a comrade. Check what they are doing. Stealing poor people's money, taxpayers' money. It's very, very painful. My question, Minister, is on the Free State. I'm from the Free State. You see, Minister, I want to know, is it only this department that is affected? You know, I'm from there. All projects are standing still. Housing, whatever, have come to a standstill. There's a project in Kronstadt, Malgay, a housing project. It was all over the TV with new furniture and what, 2 years ago. It's up until today, people have not moved in. Now, I want to ask the minister, is it only this department of compeller, compeller came into a sea that he don't even understand, but he's there now, all right, we must save him now. But is it only that department, or all other departments? That's my clarity. Thank you very much.
Honorable Bloom, we're dealing with Limpopo, but you take a shot home. Anyone else in that row? Yeah, man, come here. Honorable Jacobs?
Thank you. Let me also applaud the briefing that we have received from different ministers, and also welcome the intervention that they have made. Out of the presentation, I just want to check, because what I'm going to ask here, I didn't hear it coming clear from the Minister of Finance, rather than what we read in the papers, to say there will be special courts that will be put in place when there is fraudulent activities or acts of criminality, they will be referred immediately to those special courts. So can you get a report on that? And how far have you gone on that issue? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Jacob. Anyone else?
Me too.
Thank you, Honorable Members, for your questions. Honorable Ministers, Minister of Finance, you can delegate.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The leader of the ministerial, the interministerial committee will sweep, so maybe let's start the little one. Then he will do the work for the rest of us. If I understood the question very briefly, was there a plan in place before putting these colleges or raising these issues, or is there a plan? Yes. In fact, just to take honourable members to you, Chair, briefly, what we have done You know, since the establishment of this department, what we have done is that we have held no less than three summits, one an FET College Summit, one a Higher Education Summit, and another one, a National Skills Conference, not a summit as such. But we've not just stopped there. We've met with all college principals early last year, all of them, the 50, with very clear vision and plan which we articulated, which they also enriched. And the department, by the way, has also visited all 50 FET colleges. We know what is happening in each college in terms of governance, in terms of capacity for management, and we've also finished the initial audit of all the 7,000 FET college lecturers. But most importantly, we have a memorandum of understanding, because honorable members will know that these colleges are in transition, okay, to this new Department of Higher Education and Training. But we signed 2 years ago already a memorandum of understanding with all the 9 provincial MSCs, myself, on what needs to be done, how to jointly manage this period, and how to actually prepare for the transition. So none of the 50 colleges can say that they don't know where we're going to and what we want to do and what is expected. So are the 9 MSCs, by the way, who are also absolutely clear about what we want to do. Of course, I don't want to deny that there are certain other objective and even subjective constraints that we all have to jointly address across the provinces, you know, but that should not run away from the, we should not run away from the fact that we do have a plan. And very quickly, you know, some of our plans that are known by everybody is raising the quality in the FET colleges, moving FET colleges closer to employers so that we improve quality as well as possible placement and employment of students and all that. But maybe when the select committee itself, the one on education, meets, I would be more than happy to appear before it to go into some detail on this very important matter. We don't have time to do that today. The second and last question was from Honorable Sassman. Indeed, teaching and learning has been severely affected in many of these colleges. Their state of functionality is not satisfactory at all. Even worse in the 2 colleges that we are considering putting under administration in terms of what is happening. In essence, what we want to do immediately is the officials on the ground, we've asked them to start preparing for, is what we have already done, by the way, with the Eastern Cape, because the Eastern Cape FET colleges themselves are in a very solid state. But last year already we have set a team that is based there that is looking at governance, management, quality programs, partnerships and all that to assist with FET colleges. I hope, Chairperson, this does at least answer the questions from the honorable members on my side. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Macy.
First, in response to Honorable Makubeni, there was no way we could go to Limpopo with a plan when we did not understand the depth of the problem. First things first, the depth and the causes of that particular problem. And our first step was to diagnose that particular problem. Hence the Treasury had to say, after arresting a number of processes, send the senior officials there to dig deep, because what you were seeing was things at the surface level. That's why our officials are there. So as we are digging deep in relation to all the problems we've mentioned, we're able to understand now the nature of that particular problem. Then it's only then that you come up with a plan. In some instances, you need a short-term plan to deal with immediate issues. In some instances, you have to put the issues into the medium or even before you can even make accusations and say this is that, you have to be very careful. Get all the information, then you'll be able to make the conclusion. So it was very difficult for every department. However, once we were there and there were problems, there were immediate plans which were put by the different departments in dealing with the situation which was arising on the ground. The second point in relation to public works, which I think is we need just to mention. In public works, we've discovered that there's no database of cost, and there's no standard format of the estimate, which has been prescribed by the department to enable the assessment of the realism of the project cost or even the value of those particular projects, inclusive of the budgeting processes. No price bills of quantities are submitted with the tenders. The price bills of the quantities are submitted after the awards have been made. So that's chaos. So this presents then to us a failure in determining the efficacy of the price of the bids being considered. There's no compliance to proper capturing of the project execution details. The commencement of the project is without confirmation of funding. It's just done after the fact. So these are the issues which we're dealing with. So the value and the monetary quantification, it's been consolidated. That's why we have sent the officials. We are advised by the treasurer, send the people with the special skills, not just people at the management level, with the special skills who are going to be able to look into those things and quantify these issues. That's what they are doing at the moment. Thank you.
Minister Mosheka.
Thank you, sir. My neighbor has, I've copied from him some of the questions that I think we're building the solution to surprise where I got them from. No, that means... Okay, let me add on to the question that Mr. Ngwesi has responded to in addition to Mr. Makube, to say, didn't we know the problems that were there? On a monthly basis, we monitor provinces, but I think what is important is also to understand the relationship of how provinces interact with national. So my responsibility, delegate from Western Cape, is to do an oversight and monitoring and give directives, not to. That's how far I go. So even if I'm aware that a province has excess teachers, through monitoring, I'm able to say, MEC, you have a problem here. They're exceeding your budget, cut down. And that's as far as I can go, because I'm not an implementer in a province. It's only when you have Section 101B that I'm able to say, for almost the whole year, I've been saying to you, your budget is not credible. We're coming in perhaps with a team of experts to help you make a credible budget. Outside that, you cannot do anything except for monitoring, oversight, and giving directives. And it depends whether the directives are being followed. So we were quite aware the whole year that there were problems. Even when the budget was being passed, we engaged with the MEC that this budget is not credible, it is going to create problems. What are you going to do? And the MEC was hopeful that their treasurer would bail them out. And when their treasurer was not bailing them out, then they got into real trouble. We were quite aware, for instance, that they were exceeding even their infrastructure budget. I told him as early as June to say, from our monitoring, you are almost exceeding your budget. What are you going to do? Then again, we're saying we're going to make representation to our treasurer. So that's how we are aware that there were problems. But we can't do much about the problems until such time that we have the power, through Section 1B, to intervene and perhaps assist the province. So I thought I should just clear that. And the whole question of, and some of the problems, is that I'm not defending provinces, to be honest, because some of the problems that are hitting Limpopo are problems that are even outside the system. I mean, this rapid urbanization is a problem for us, because parents, when they move with their kids. You know, when they don't leave them behind in our school. So when they move from Western Cape, from Eastern Cape to Western Cape, they move with their kids. And overnight, you have people that you have employed whose services are not required overnight. And it's not something, I mean, these are people who are employed, who have contracts with you. The process of dealing with it is not a process that you can be saying, you have lost 100,000 kids to the Western Cape, now all go away. So you have to, as a system, do work around it in a way that accommodates the workers, accommodates the fact that they have rights too, also they are human beings, and also sorts of things. The workers that we picked up with provinces, they take too long to deal with that problem until it really becomes unmanageable. And that's where the weakness is. Different provinces, especially rural provinces, have a similar problem. In KZN has a similar problem of rapid urbanization. But because they're proactive, they have been able, or they are working very hard to manage that process. I'm aware, for instance, Mpumalanga has a similar problem of excess teachers. And they are dealing with that. We also are not fully in agreement with the way they're managing it, but they're dealing with it. So it's a problem that is really outside the teachers. So even questions of growth, teachers, again, I'm not defending the sector or management of sick leave. It's that is the speed with which they manage things which are there in the system. We all are aware as a country that we have a burden of disease. I think thanks to improvements in our health system in terms of people who really get sick from all threatening diseases and suddenly bounce back. And that in itself has affected the province's capacity to handle their sickness. Because I think in the past we knew that if they are gravely sick, they are almost dead, so we know we have to bond you. But now you can be gravely sick and bounce back very well. So, and that in itself affects, I think, our old system of managing sickness. My colleague tells me that there was a question about Eastern Cape, say how are we going to manage this. And I can report that I think we're doing lots of progress in the Eastern Cape. We may not be making noise about it. I think you might be aware that we've already managed to get teachers back. And the fact that Eastern Cape, for instance, last year, despite its major problems, before we intervened, but we intervened in the Eastern Cape around March, when for 3 months there has not been any teaching in the province. We came in, worked with the province to have extra classes, to have a recovery program, and the minister that though they may not have increased their pass rate, they sustained their pass rate just because of our intervention. It could have been worse if we didn't have all those recovery programs and all the support programs that we had with them. So I think we're making progress. We've done a scoping exercise. We've stabilized on LTSN. We've stabilized on scholar transport. We've stabilized on school nutrition. What we are dealing with in the Eastern Cape is the deep-seated problems that are there in the province in terms of the excess staff. It's not an easy thing to deal with that excess staff, because it has been left for too long. Right. So to move people from urban areas and say tomorrow, I mean, these are family people who are established where they are and say now you're going to go and work in the city. It's not something you do without negotiating and working it through over a period of time. So we are now left with the deep-seated problem. And just in terms of that the court we have been instructed to employ the temporary teachers back, especially we're very happy about it because we don't believe that you can deal with temporary teachers just in the stroke of a pen. Because those temporary teachers are actually the ones who need more. What we have to deal with is this difficult one of your excess teachers. And these are your permanent employed people who are there permanently on your contract. And then balancing them is not a very easy act. But I can really assure people that we're making lots of progress in the Eastern Cape. Just last week we've agreed with the provincial government of Eastern Cape. We are going now to send teams to deal with the underlying problem. So we may not be running to the media and saying, here we are, but I can assure you we're doing lots of progress in the Eastern Cape. And that experience is helping us also in how we deal with Limpopo.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I apologize to the Honourable Mubi. I misunderstood your question. You received, I think, clarity on that in the Eastern Cape. Honourable Chaledi.
Yeah. Chairperson, I'm not sure that I'm getting out of order here, but I'm feeling strongly I need to correct something. Minister of Basic Education was out of the house, so she might not have detected that. I'm getting worried. When the question was asked, was that good teachers have been allowed back? Yes, in the Eastern Cape, it might be a precedent. It worries me. because I think there's a confusion here between good teachers and temporary teachers. And the minister couldn't have picked up because she was not here. There's no good teachers who is back in the history. Good teachers are teachers who don't exist. They are not there, but they are being paid. So they can't be back, These are temporary teachers who were put off the system. Yes. So it's a different thing. I'm not worried that it will be recorded, you know. That some goals are bad, you know. we spoke about musicians coming back, you know. We thought it might be an instinct in South Africa, but goals come back. We thought goals are always back. Chairperson, thank you. Thank you once more. Please forgive me because I was feeling very bad about that situation. Yeah. Chairperson, I think some of the questions are cross-cutting, like whether we had a plan before moving in or not. There was a plan, Chairperson. And the reason that the Minister of Finance went to Cabinet is because the plan that were there were no longer working. Yes. You put that plan first to try and help. If they're no longer with you, move in. For instance, it's a question of accruals. By 2009, all provincial health departments, and I say all, had problems of accruals, which was picked up by the then Deputy Auditor General, Professor Lewis, who was sent by the then Minister of Health, Minister Barbara Hocken. They picked up this issue of accruals. We put together a team, headed by our CFO. They formed the CFO forum, put the report here and went through it one by one from 2009, how to deal with the accruals. The reason that you don't see other provinces here is because they did that. If some provinces don't do it, then you are forced to move in. It's not that you have a plan. You had it for some time and it's not working. Then you say, I'm moving to the next step. It's like this section 100A. You put up a plan and put the province under section 100A. If it doesn't work and there's no response under 100A, then you move to 100B. I don't know whether beyond 100B then you abolish the province or what. You are members of parliament, you tell us. But I'm saying we don't just wake up and rush to a province and say we want to act. It will be because something has been done over some period of time. And it's not waiting. And it's then that you say, look, we need to do something. Honorable Mashama, it is this issue of health information system. May you allow me not to respond to you today because this is a subject of the special investigative unit. It's an issue of the special forces. I don't know whether it's public protector and this. All of them are working together to investigate things like this. And until such time that they give a report, I may not be able to make any comment about it. I think the issue of taking political responsibility, we have already answered. The question from Honorable Rasmin, part of our being there is to make sure that when we move out, these problems have been resolved. You've got the correct people in place, you've got correct systems. If we are there and we move out before the systems have been corrected, of course it don't take a long time. We'll be forced to go back again. So we are hoping that once we go in, we look at what is the problem, try to correct it. If it's a problem for a human being, we see how we deal with that. If it's a level of a system, we see how we put up that system. That includes the question from Honorable Sibande. We are already doing that, by the way. That if something is procured at more money than it normally should have been, we correct it. If we know that ordinarily this bottle of water was supposed to cost 20 rand, then it's being charged for 100 rand. Part of our work is to make sure that it's charged correctly. Otherwise, then we won't be able to help the situation. There are people who believe Section 100 means we take a bag of money and rush there and pay. Not necessarily that you correct the problems that led to that end. It might be that after correcting them, things just fall into place. Thank you.
It's like costing the electricity supply in Mangaung. They did the costing wrong and the entire strike had municipality. We were there. We came out.
I think one of the key elements of the intervention is verify
the commitments that were made by the province. For instance, I was quoting an amount of 84.5 million. It's a lot of money. There's a bit more than that. And the task then is to say, this invoice, where does it come from? Where is the work that was done? How do you verify it? So that in that exercise, which involves the legitimacy, just the verifying the legitimacy of the award, the analysis of internal controls that were employed, whether they're adequate or not, closing of identified gaps, and then the alignment of budget with strategic plan, and then the value for money analysis. You can't have a bridge that is costing one amount and a similar bridge or a less costly bridge costing more, not even to go to the quality of the work that is there. So these are the exercises that are going there. That's why then you've got really quite a high-powered team that goes there, the engineers, people who know the budgeting, the financial controls, but also who are going to go on the ground and actually see whether when you say there's a road, there is actually a road. When you say there's a bridge, there is actually a bridge. And in that, so far, for instance, we're at 84.5 million, which we cannot verify. And that's quite huge, and we're still going. And I mean, we've just been there since December. We're still going. So, and also the institutional arrangements that are there, when you are dealing with the Department of Roads and Transport, then it issues tender. It's straightforward enough. But if you have got to go via the Limpopo Road Agent to run via thing, and then you still go through a gateway, airway, airport authority of Limpopo, it's another. So that when you want to an immediate answer, you still have got to ask an agency who is going to verify whether it's going to answer to you or not, and that sort of thing. So you want to bring all those things such that the task that we're supposed to perform, to oversee that the taxpayers' money is spent properly, is done, and the task that the members of parliament are supposed to do, oversight, is actually done. They should not be told that, no, that is Gateway Airport Company, it's got nothing to do with you, or it's a roads agency, it's not the Department of Transport and Roads. So all those things are now being brought together and say, we want answers because the source of the money is one. It's a taxpayer through this parliament. Thanks.
Minister Bonacci. Thank
you very much,
Chairperson. It does seem to me that we have to respond to the question that was raised by the Honourable Member on when she raised the question, what is the role of the NCOP in this intervention? I'm sure that the Minister of Finance, the leader of the delegation, will correct me, but my understanding is that the National Executive is empowered by the Constitution to make this national intervention. And in terms of that national intervention, we are required to make this written notice to the NCOP and to keep the NCOP briefed about the intervention so that there is concurrence on the strategic objectives that the national intervention seeks to address. And it's clear from the case that has remained thus far by the various ministers, we amply demonstrate the basis for the intervention. And it's clear that had government not decided to act, we would have been in a much worse situation than what we have found ourselves in. Now, as this intervention deepens, there are also some very, very clear things that are coming through. And the first important principle that appears to come through in this intervention is that no matter how senior you are in government or in the ruling party, you must be prepared to face the consequences for wrongdoing. We cannot advocate that there will be protection for any person, no matter how high up in office he is, when there is evidence that the integrity of the state has been compromised and that services to our people are being affected. The second principle that appears to be very clear to us is that our parliament and indeed our government has got a host and battery of laws and regulations that need to be more strenuously applied if we're going to ensure that the precepts of good corporate governance must in fact be delivering a developmental state that seeks to address the problems of our people. Of course, the third principle is that government will not hesitate to act. Act in a way in which must guarantee that the basic services to our people are protected, are sustained, and that at the end of the day, we are all here to serve the people and not ourselves. What's also very clear, Chairperson, is that there is something that has gone radically wrong in the ethos of the public service. And this requires very speedy attention. It may well be that this is not a malady that affects the entire public service, but the public service has been corrupted in certain critical courts, and that our intervention must be aimed at rooting this thing out and taking it out of the body politic of our country. So I think that this enjoins both the executive and the NCOP to be seized with this operation as we develop it, to continuously be informed, and we also look forward to your recommendations as to how we could improve on the interventions we are making to date. Mr. Gordon.
The Honorable Mashila, I think it was, asked three questions to which the Minister has asked me to respond. The first one related to the preparation of the budget for the 2012 MTF going forward. Indeed, this is probably one of the most important budgets that any province will table, because not only does it have to make sure that there is continuity of provision of services in health, education in particular, going forward in that province, but it also has to provide for dealing with the debts of the past, because they cannot be wished away. The unauthorized expenditure, for an example, has got to be cleared through finance bills. Part of it, if not all of it, would require funding to be made available. So there has to be then the delicate balance of trying to deal with that past, but also at the same time ensure that it's not disruptive to the services going forward. Because of that, it is therefore very important that all of us, the national government, the departments that have intervened, but also the province, are supportive of it. And the process that we have run up to now has been inclusive. and I'm glad to announce here that it has received favorable support from the executive in the province up to the premier. I've just lost track of dates, but I do know that there was a plan to discuss budget and financial management related issues at Lekhotla that was planned for the province, Exco Lekhotla that is, and the leader of the intervention at the official level appointed by the Treasury was invited by the Premier Minister to come and present the budget. So it got support, it has been participatory in approach, and it will be tabled
on time as prescribed by the law within 2 weeks after the tabling of the national budget. The shortfall, the shortfall is a bit of a moving target. We hope we are right when we say that the maximum that it could have potentially become was the 2 billion. But in an instance where there are accruals recorded and possibly unrecorded, one has got to say this guardedly, because there is always a chance that invoices might come out of drawers. I'm not saying I know this for a fact, but that could upset the situation. So I'm saying that the maximum we anticipate it could be is the 2 billion. However, there has been a process already, as the minister was indicating, to trim it down. It's getting closer now to a billion. We hope that we can squeeze it down even further to make sure that it's a very small shortfall, or there is no shortfall at all. Key in doing that, and that takes me to the question about backlogs. Key in doing that is to make sure that the province has cash to meet the most critical commitment. So, in a way, we can't just focus on dealing with that shortfall and say, pay, for instance, creditors, to a point where you go way beyond the cash that the province has. So we've got to balance this thing, make sure that, one, we pay to the extent that there is cash, and that process therefore requires prioritization. It means that the approach that we've adopted gets adhered to quite strictly, which is to say, what are the services that, no matter what happens, have got to continue uninterrupted? Minister Musaledi has referred to making sure that the providers of services to hospitals, providers of pharmaceuticals and stuff like that get paid. Similarly, we are prioritizing provision of LTSM, scholar transport, and education. So I need not go through the list, but I think the point is made that in dealing with backlogs, in dealing with the issue of the shortfall, we have got to make sure that critical services remain in place uninterrupted. We pay to the extent that we have got the cash available, and that requires prioritization. But at the same time, and this is the final point I will make, that whatever we do edges us towards full compliance with the law, both in terms of the budget as a law, but also in terms of the PSMA requirements that we should pay within 30 days. Understanding, of course, that here we are dealing with a special set of circumstances, so it may not be easy fully to comply with every aspect of the law immediately or instantaneously, but very quickly within the means available to us, we've got to move towards making sure that everything that happens in the 4.05 financial management is concerned gravitates towards full compliance with the law. Thank you.
PDG, Chairperson, perhaps let me start with the Honourable Mushiga. The key point arising from what the DG is saying, and all of our experiences, is you can only spend money you have. Secondly, that in order to tackle what you call the backlogs or accruals, as some of the other colleagues have called it, you've got to cut unnecessary expenditure. In every budgeting system, there is fact. And we've got to start looking for that fact. We've got to start looking for, let's call them the glamour projects, and start recognizing that we've got to live within our means. And we believe that there's a significant fact that can, in fact, be cut. You make an absolutely valid point about the capacity of officials in leading positions, and In that regard, as the Minister of Public Service and Administration has indicated, there's work to do. Let me link that to the Honourable Bloom's point, where he makes references to the word crook. I think we employ, what, 1.1, 1.2 million public servants in provinces and national departments. We would humbly suggest that the majority of them are not crooks. The majority of them want to do an honest day's work. Many of them are people who have their hearts and their minds in the right place. The crooks are a few, and we've got to identify those few and root them out of the system and create an environment where the crooks don't intimidate the honest public servants. Now, in many situations, the crooks intimidate others to remain quiet, to not report them. We don't protect whistleblowers adequately in our system. Senior management often doesn't have the courage to make sure that they act on these sorts of matters. That begins to create a rot in the system. And it is those things that we need to be mindful of, but be very careful, if I may respectfully advise, that we don't call everybody crooks, nor do we want to call everybody incompetent, because by and large we have a competent state. It needs more capacity, it needs to be a lot more capable than it is, but our state, compared to probably more than 100 countries around the world, is a very capable state, in relative terms. In relation to the challenges we have, it needs to develop a lot more capability than we have at this point in time. The other point that the Honorable Mashire makes is also an important point. Remove politics, this is an administrative intervention. And I think that's reinforced by many of the colleagues that have actually spoken. We are there to, as one of my colleagues said, to fix the system, to ensure that we leave a sustainable system behind with competent people and make sure that we don't have to go back there in 3 months' time, as Minister Mukherjee was actually saying. So at the end of the day, we want provinces to work. Provinces absorb 44% of our total expenditure this current year. That's a lot of money. That's 44% of 900 billion rand. And we and ourselves have an added responsibility now to make sure that we monitor the spending of the 44 billion rand. Because that's not our money, only to the extent that we pay tax with our money. But that's the money of taxpayers, and that's the money that the Treasury borrows on behalf of this country, which this year is about 170 billion rand. If we don't spend 44% of that wisely and don't make sure that the right controls are in place, then we will be letting down our people and not leaving sustainable systems behind. The Honorable Makubela, I think you tackled your question with the Director General when he referred to the budget and so on, essentially addressed the question of stabilizing the bank account. What we mean is, make sure you have enough cash there to pay. And don't overspend if at all you can help it. The Honorable Sibande, whether departments have risk management, in terms of the law, they're required to have risk management. But you see, having a piece of paper which says this is how we see risks for the next year and being mindful of it in management terms every single day are two very different things. So we have lots of formalities, you know, stat plans, annual plans, risk systems, audit committees, as you were saying, and all of those things are there. The question is there the will to make them work properly? And do we have enough monitoring from the NCOP or Parliament more generally to ensure that the systems and institutions are working is part of the challenge. How we prevent over expenditure of people who are in responsible positions to do their job. If I'm responsible for a particular department, or if I'm an accounting officer, or if I'm an executive authority, or if I'm, as some of you have pointed out, responsible for implementing the Public Audit Act or anything like that, do your job and ensure that we only spend the money that we have, that accruals don't accumulate to the extent that they've accumulated, and that we pay, as Minister Mukherjee was saying, pay the right price. And all of us are worried about that. In many, many instances, we can't give you too much data at the moment, but anecdotally there's lots of evidence of business people overpricing. And so one of the lessons we're learning in this exercise is how do we relate to the business community what are not just the ethics within government, but what's the ethics within the business sector? Because they are also undermining the state by charging double and treble what the actual cost of a service or a set of goods that they supply to the state is. That's unacceptable. That's unacceptable. And perhaps you need to call in as Parliament some of the business people and ask them, why are you doing what you're doing? Because we can produce or deliver, as Minister Wateka is now whispering on the side, 3 schools for the price of 1. Right? So schools are charged to the state at 90 million rand. You can build 3 schools for that 90 million rand. Like that, there's any number of examples. She didn't mention the LTSM bill in one of the provinces. Started at 670 million rand. Ended at 230 million rand by the time her department actually checked the bill. Now, we would have walked away with almost 400 million rand free of charge, is the question, had somebody just signed that order. And that's, again, unacceptable conduct, both on the part of the people who prepared the so-called order paper and on the part of the people who tendered to deliver those goods. Now, multiply that 400 million rand a couple of times, or a couple of hundred times, and that's a huge amount of money that we're losing within the system that is really not affordable. The Honourable Becker, all of us stand here as people who take absolute responsibility for what's going on. We're not shifting them. Minister Nzimande doesn't say I'm to blame for things that he has responsibility for, and I'm not going to do the opposite either. So as a collective and individually, I want to assure you and those who are listening that we are here because we take responsibility. We are intervening because we are both responsible and are willing to take the responsibility to correct the things that need to be corrected. So let us be absolutely categorical about that. Honourable Member Nube raises, I think, a very valid point about how you coordinate your efforts so that we don't stumble across each other in what she calls the stampede. And I'm sure, Chairperson, you will help in that regard, but if we could help in any way, let us know as well, so that we could work with you rather than at cross purposes. And I'm sure all of the ministries will work with you in this regard. Honourable Rashmani, how do we ensure that the problems don't occur? Minister Matsuri addressed this, that the repair job that we have to do is not an overnight job. Section 101B is only a start. And a lot more needs to be put together to ensure that all of us begin to get these institutions onto the right track. But I think we've made a very good start, as my colleague actually said. In the Free State, Honourable Groom, is that the only department? Clearly not. But, you know, we've got to start somewhere. And the one good thing is that we have a reasonably good commitment from all of the premiers in Limpopo and Gauteng and the Free State to work with us to get these things right. And if that continues, then we're on a good wicket in terms of where we're going. The Honourable Jacobs, reference to special courts. What we have had as part of the coordinating groups of Directors General under Mr. Fuzile's leadership, is the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development taking responsibility for coordinating all of the enforcement agencies. And in fact, as we sit here today, those agencies are having a meeting with representatives from all of our departments in Polokwane today. And all we're saying is that as our work continues, as we do investigations of one kind or another, if we find maladministration of any kind, or if we find conduct which is against the law, then either we're going to refer that to the Department of Public Service and Administration for disciplinary action to be taken, or to the relevant law enforcement authorities so that they can do what they have to do. So again, what we're saying is, as Honourable Sibande said, government is functioning. We've got our systems in place, and should the need arise, that appropriate action needs to be taken in terms of the law, that action will be taken. Let me round up Honourable Chairperson, by reiterating that we are in the provinces to ensure that we leave the provinces on a more sustainable footing. They play a very important part in delivering very important services to our people, and it's absolutely crucial that those services are neither interrupted, nor is the opportunity to improve the quality of the service one that we should actually miss. Secondly, let me say that we need the appropriate levels, as many of you have said, of control and respect for the control. You know, again, accountants, and there's some sitting behind me, can put all sorts of controls in place like lawyers can do as well. But if we disregard them, and if we lose our spirit of accountability and the kind of oversight yourselves and others are supposed to exercise, then no controls are actually going to work. So what we certainly need amongst both political office bearers and administrative office bearers is a higher level of accountability for the public money that we're actually spending. And I believe that it is possible to get that right. Part of that accountability is a much greater respect for provincial treasury and MEC's for finance. Generally, what has been happening is there's a decline in respect for the PFMA, respect for procurement laws, and respect for a treasury official who says, you only have so much of money, don't spend beyond. And it is that disregard that then begins to create the kind of decline that we've actually had. So part of the function that you might want to assume, Chairperson, is our provincial treasury strong enough? Do they have the right competent people? I'm sure all the departments will want competent people in their respective departments in the province as well. And is there the right kind of financial respect for the kind of work that they actually do? All in all, I think we are on a good wicket. Government did intervene at the right time. And if we maintain the right level of leadership and integrity and act decisively where that is appropriate, which I hope is what we've demonstrated, and if we can get the right reciprocity from everyone concerned, we'll have the provinces on a much better footing in the next 6 months. Thank you very much.
Minister Shamandi.
Listen, I really didn't want to speak after Minister Godan because he has said everything. But I can't resist this one in completing the questions that he is asking. The question to this House, to the MCOP, what is the role of provincial legislature in oversight? Why should it be national who actually picks up these issues and these problems? And I think that's a matter actually that the MCOP cannot avoid. It's fine, we're willing to cut the end account, but also we have got to throw the question back. Why are the provincial legislators not being able to pick up these issues? Sorry, I didn't want to add because Minister Godan has really said it all and very well, but I could not resist this one, Chairperson.
You, Honourable Minister, you put the finger on the spot. We've just been to a province dealing with municipalities, and it was very clear that the legislature in that province have to play a more active role. Even the previous province we visited. Went to Northwest, went to Northern Cape. National Treasury is intervening in municipalities, national treasury, not provincial treasury. When we compile our report, send it through, we interact with Mr. Kenneth Brown, Jan Hatton, with DBSA. It comes from national. The provincial department must get on board. Then they haven't got the capacity, because they can see from the department coming over from over 3, 4, 5 years. That's what we are dealing with. And that's the point I made in the beginning, coming out in the AG's report of Lokopo, the role of the provincial legislature and its committees. And that intervention has to come between the chairperson N.J. Maslangu, chairperson of the NCOP, and the speaker of that provincial legislature. What this committee did was to connect provincial
legislators and the speakers with the FFC 2 years ago. It just didn't happen. So that's the role the NCP can play in also connecting. Thank you to the Minister of Finance and his colleagues, the other honourable members. I'm going to give the opportunity now to the chairperson of Education, of Health, and to the Honourable Shabandi, chairperson of the Select Committee for Public Service, to make a short input. We're doing this jointly, so I'm not running the show alone.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think as the Select Committee on Education and Recreation, our main responsibility is to do oversight, which we definitely going to do. We are going to work as a collective, because as members of Parliament and representatives, we've got a commitment, you know, to ensure that services are delivered to our ordinary people. On that note, I really take it and ensure that as a Select Committee, we're really going to do what we're supposed to be doing. Thanks.
Chairperson, I would like to take this opportunity to thank this opportunity that we have been called to come and listen to to the different presentations of what is happening in Limpopo. We really appreciate it, and we'll ensure that within our plans, we work together with your Select Committee so that we don't work outside what has been planned by the SOP. Thanks very much.
Chairperson, I think what can I say in short? Thank you very much for the indication of transparency, because some people, they don't understand transparency. Once you show up transparency, they look at a weakness as if you are weakness, you are weak. Why are you showing that you are functioning? Keep it up with that spirit so that you empower us to make our responsibility to be easier, because we're going to make follow up and we're going to work together. Thank you very much.
Thank you to the Honorable Chairperson. Very important point that came out from the Minister Padiachi is actually the work ethics. How are we committed to do our work and to do our work better? If I have to start 8 o'clock, can't I start 7:30? Work half an hour more. Going home at 4, can't I go home at 5? Work an hour later. Get your desk empty, tomorrow you start with a clean desk. That's basics. That's basics that you are taught in public administration. The other thing is talking about capacity. We are hearing this year after year after year when we deal with annual reports, corporate reports, etc. Go and do what China did. Go to the high schools and recruit grade 12 learners that's doing well in mathematics and science, and recruit them to go and study financial management and project management. 3 years, you take them in, you pay for their studies, come and work for government. We must start doing this. Otherwise, we're going to have the same story over and over and over. The challenges we have this morning is serious, and it needs serious people to solve it. Serious people sitting here. Serious people sitting in the Select Committees. Yes, we are going to solve it, and we are going to do our work. Other very important point is, how do we enforce the PFMA? It is there. How do we enforce it? One way is through our oversight, taking resolutions, but then doing a follow-up on our resolutions. I think that is where portfolio committees must get a better grip. Go back to that province, go back to that department that you did the oversight on, and go see what happened. 6 months, 12 months. The hands-on approach. The annual performance plan and the budget of departments, compare it with the previous years. When you deal with the annual report, compare it with the previous 3 or 4 years. What trends do you get? And then you can zoom in on that. I think we made history today, all the members, ministers,
It's the first time that eight ministers and executives appear before a meeting in this way. So thank you very much for your participation. Thank you for your leadership and your commitment. We will be dealing with the National Treasury, the Minister of Finance, when the budget is presented, the Division of Revenue Bills, and the honourable chairpersons of the select committees are welcome to come and attend that meeting.
So there you will see how the income is divided between the three spheres of government. Honourable members, honourable ministers, let's bring us to the end of the meeting.